It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me. And I guess we know that winter's on the way. Certainly the last few days have done something which, for those of us who like to be in the outdoors, we rue the day when the water in front of our decoys turns from soft water and lots of birds to hard water and the thought of a couple months of ice. And that's where we are, across the Midwest, in fact, across much of America. The last of the big migration for all kinds of birds is underway right now. Many of those birds have already left Illinois. Others are passing over. And it's time, middle of December, which actually, in a way, almost a little bit late. Here we are on the 10th of December. But we certainly are having the big push of birds right now. I wanted to start off with a story that is just unbelievable. And it's a story about a deer, a large buck deer, that had spent all of its energy in the rut. That's all we can figure out it could have done. That it was so exhausted that it enabled an individual to walk right up to it and pet it on its forehead. A completely wild deer. And the story is something like this. And we know that in the animal world, particularly the large animals, deer and elk and antelope, when they go into rut, they use all of their energy pursuing does and fighting off other deer, and they literally just become exhausted. And that's probably what happened here, but it's one of those stories in nature that you had to be there to believe it. It was in southern Illinois, and an individual that I know very well, we were out picking up decoys from an area that was about to freeze over, and we looked on the left side of our four-wheeler, and 5 yards away was a large buck deer, whitetail, staring at us, just looking at us. It wasn't 15 feet away. And my friend got off the four-wheeler. I'm thinking, man, you know, these deer are wild animals, and if it's sick or whatever, it's certainly got horns, and it can hurt you. And he slowly walked towards it, taking step by step, and he got 10 feet, 5 feet, and the deer is just looking at him, and I'm thinking, you are crazy. You are about to get trampled by a buck. And he stepped forward, and he grabbed with his left hand, and he grabbed the right antler of the deer as the deer is looking at him, and the deer had 4 points on each side, pretty widespread, certainly probably a 3 or 4 year old whitetail, and he held the antler in his hand, and the deer didn't try to run away, didn't try to shake its head. Then he took his right hand and he rubbed the forehead of the buck, and the deer just stood there like a dog would, having its, you know, its forehead scratched. And then he let go, and he turned around and he walked back to the four-wheeler, sat on the four-wheeler, and the deer just looked at him, and we decided this was an absolutely, sadly, a very sick deer. But then we began to talk about it as we moved off, and we realized, wait a minute, that deer, this is the end of the rut, and that deer probably is just exhausted. It was standing in water over its knees, just below its belly, had found a place to hide, and it just simply couldn't go any further. So later that afternoon, went back, and there was the deer again. This time, though, as we approached, the deer looked at us and took off, just like they always do. And it ran about 80 yards through the water and turned, looked back at us, and we, you know, puddled up towards it in the four-wheeler again, got about 80 yards away, and off it went again. So we decided the only thing that could possibly have happened was that this deer had simply run out of energy, used all of its energy in their, not only their ancestral, but in their DNA to try to repopulate the population and procreate, and it was a large buck, and from fighting other deer and probably chasing does for the past several weeks, it had just reached the point where it couldn't go any further, and it just stood there and let us walk right up to it, grab its horns, pet its forehead. So I've never seen anything like it. I doubt I ever will again. And I went from thinking that deer is sick and about to die to there's nothing wrong with that deer, and hopefully he makes it through the winter and makes it through the summer, because he's a very, very, has the promise of being a wonderful large white bucktail, large buck whitetail. But if other of you have ever had that kind of experience, I'd sure love to know. I never have. I've asked around since this happened, and nobody I know has, they've said deer get so exhausted they just can't move, and of course that's when they're really susceptible to predation by coyotes. But no one I know has walked up to a perfectly healthy wild deer, pet it in the forehead, and walked away. But that's what happened. And I guess that's just a story. If you spend enough time in nature, enough things happen that you really can't believe. I want to switch from deer to talking about, and I'm going to come back to this after the break, to talking about the monument situation in Utah and Bear's Ear and this huge national outcry over whether or not the President of the United States should rescind the monument designation of the last few days of the Obama administration, setting aside millions of acres of Utah for national monument status under the Antiquities Act. And my comment would be that it was time for a president. It doesn't matter if it was President Trump or another president. It was time for a president to say the Antiquities Act is, in fact, out of date. It came into being under President Theodore Roosevelt. He created to set aside very, very special places in America that maybe Congress wouldn't move quickly enough upon. That was 1906. That's a long, long time ago. And in that, and currently in today's world, we pretty much know just about every corner of America, the lower 48, and we probably know most of Alaska and Hawaii. Why in the waning days of a presidency, a president would go and do what President Obama did to create these enormous national monument areas in Utah over the objections of the state of Utah, the congressional delegation, senators and congressmen, and just arbitrarily do this, is the reason the Antiquities Act is probably, not probably, should be rescinded from Congress. The President of the United States needs to work with Congress, both parties, to set aside lands in perpetuity that are going to be protected from hiking, biking, energy development, mineral, oil, gas, whatever it might be. It's not up to one person. We did not elect an emperor. It's not up to one person to decide, I want this to be off limits forever to the American public for consumptive use. It's so special that it should never, ever, ever be open for consumptive use. One person should not have that right. And so whether you agree with President Trump or not, on rescinding of the Bear's Ear National Monument area in Utah, what I hope you'll agree with or think about is, why do we let one person have the kind of power that is enabled under the Antiquities Act to change the face of America forever? So what President Trump did was say, first of all, I don't think this should be a national monument. The people of Utah don't think it should be a national monument. It's going to remain federal land. It's going to remain under the control of the federal government, but it's not going to be put off limits forever to development. I think that is what he really was saying. But beyond that, what he's saying is one person shouldn't be able to do this, or that's the result at least. And I think Congress will revisit this, but I wonder what would happen here sitting in the Midwest if suddenly a president of the United States, doesn't matter whether it's President Trump or President Obama or a future president, decided, you know what, I think the Madewin Tallgrass Prairie, which used to be the Joliet Arsenal, a bombing range, is so special that it should become a national monument, and it should be set aside in perpetuity so that it cannot have recreational use. It should just be there. I wonder how those of us who live in Illinois and Indiana and the rest of the Midwest we would feel about a president doing that to us. We probably would feel very much as though the people of Utah have just felt. So when we read about Patagonia and all these groups filing lawsuits, and we read about the outdoor retailer show moving from Salt Lake City in protest, I think we need to think a little bit deeper. We do need to protect our most natural areas in the state, not only the state of Illinois, but we need to protect them across America, lower 48, Canada, and Alaska. But we should do so in cooperation with those people who live there and with Congress, not through basically a dictator saying, hey, I want to do this and you can't stop me. So whether or not I agree with the decision of how important Bears Ear is in Utah, I very much agree with the decision or the thought of line that one person shouldn't have this kind of authority because it cuts both ways. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors Show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thanks for being with me. I want to spend just a moment talking about the implications for the upcoming Farm Bill based upon what's going on in Congress now. The Farm Bill should have been completed this year, and of course we know it was not. And maybe that's a good thing, because there's the opportunity, if we can do this correctly, to have a Farm Bill take place that is actually going to really better the environment. I've talked about this before, and also better agriculture. And the ability to use technology through smart conservation, smart farming, precision farming, is going to enable us to take areas of Illinois, Iowa, Wisconsin, Indiana, all across America, and say, which of these areas is really important in reducing nitrogen runoff? Which of these areas is really important for raising pollinators, for butterflies? Which of these is really important for wetlands? Rather than taking big blocks of land and saying, square it off, and this is all going to come out of production, and we'll pay you X to do that. Now we can much more surgically go through a farmer's property, a landowner's property, and say, this is what really is important for conservation and for the health of our waterways, and this is what is not, and not pay for the things that are not important, but pay agriculture and landowners for the things that have great societal benefit. And that is the opportunity before us in the upcoming Farm Bill. There are a lot of very smart people working on this, and it's something that, as the host of the Great Outdoors Show here on WGN, I think is of paramount importance to the future of Illinois. We have a horrible nitrogen problem in the state of Illinois and across the Midwest. All across the Heartland, we have this unseen killer, nitrogen. It's a naturally occurring element, but it does not occur naturally in the kinds of levels that we now see it in our waterways. And of course, this is from agricultural use, and it's also from humans. There is both the growing of commodity crops and the growing of civilization are responsible for the incredible nitrogen loads that have led to the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico and the die-off of areas and the nitrogen and the blooms of algae. We are seeing our waterways becoming undrinkable and unusable. And the upcoming Farm Bill has a chance to reverse this, just as we did in the early 70s with the Clean Water Act. The Nixon administration was not recognized widely, but was in fact the strongest administration since Theodore Roosevelt for the advancement of our environment. We have this chance now. I'm not expecting Congress to act boldly because they don't seem to really be able to do that. But we do have the opportunity for thoughtful leadership to say, let's use our technology and let's try to have a system in agriculture where landowners are rewarded for doing good things on their land to help the environment. And now we have the technology to be able to do that. So that's going to be a discussion in the coming year on the Farm Bill. And hopefully we can be a part of that And at the end of the day, we will make a quantum leap forward for the betterment of our environment and the betterment of safety, betterment of society by having our nitrogen loads reduced dramatically. We know how to do it. We can do it. The question is, do we have the will to do it? And do we have the leadership to do it? Shifting from nitrogen to for a second, I just want to end with a quick conversation on the pebble mine in Alaska. Alaska's a long way from Illinois, but it is indicative of what's taking place with the shift in ideology in Washington. And again, there's nothing wrong with it, but the shift in ideology is the states should make decisions. The federal government should not make decisions for states. In the case of the pebble mine, it potentially would be the most destructive mine ever built in America due to its location if something went wrong. On its face value, the Pebble Mine is a great mine, lots of natural resources in Bristol Bay, Alaska, a long way from anywhere. All that's great. Bristol Bay is the number one fishery today in the world, commercial fishery, sport fishery. And if the mine is built, and if there's an earthquake, which Alaska has lots of them, or if there's a breach in the mine's tailing dams, we are going to unleash arsenic into the most pristine rivers, literally the most pristine rivers anywhere left in the world. That's what's at risk with the Pebble Mine. And the real question is that worth it? You know, we talked about the ANWR, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and how important that is. ANWR is of no importance compared to Bristol Bay. It doesn't even measure compared to what Bristol Bay means to the fisheries of Northwest Alaska, Canada, Northwest and part of the United States. It's the epicenter of all the fish in the northern part of the Pacific Rim. And we should not just look at it from the point of view of economic development for a mine, but the potential for real loss of one of the world's greatest natural resources left. I'll be back with more on that in the coming weeks as that heats up. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next Sunday morning. This is Charlie Potter in the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.